What I did is I followed up a group of women who had been working in banking and finance and who had left their employer. And I asked them what were the reasons that led to their departure, because there's a myth out there that women leave organizations or leave employers because they solely want to look after their family responsibilities. And even though family responsibilities are still a primary role of women, there have been quite a lot of societal changes. Certainly there are a lot of demographic changes. And I think that as we approach the end of the first decade of the 21st century, it was appropriate to find out whether really our perceptions of why women leave the workforce and they are not reaching higher levels in management is really because of their family responsibilities, or maybe there are other reasons for that. It's interesting that only one woman in about 10, based on my study, seemed to leave the workforce because of family reasons. Most women have left their previous employer, not necessarily the workforce, but their previous employer, for a combination of reasons. 42% say they have left purely because of work-related reasons, so there have been structural barriers that prevented them from returning to their previous employer or stay in the previous employer, because about a quarter of these women weren't even married or had children. About 46%, another 46%, said that they left for a combination of family reasons and work-related reasons. But what I found is, in the majority, even when they said it was a combination, what happens is their decision to leave the organizations comes at the end of a chain of events where they feel unrecognized, their expectations of the employer obligations towards them have been breached, and the promises have not been fulfilled, and they decide that it's not worth fighting to stay in the organization anymore. It's perhaps best to go and look for alternative employment in a more friendly environment. So they change employment. These are women that I interviewed and I've been following up in the banking and finance industry in Australia. And the banking and finance industry in Australia is really interesting because it's primarily a female-dominated environment. But as you go higher up in the hierarchy, it becomes male-dominated. And what we see in the literature is that despite the fact that women still have the primary role for family responsibilities in the Western societies, the representation of women at high levels in organizations varies according to industries. It also varies from country to country. So we cannot assume that it's just because of family responsibilities that women are not better represented, because we can't explain why in some industries it's so much better than others. The banking and finance industry actually is women are very poorly represented, despite the fact that women are on a par with men in terms of education, taking business degrees, having actually reached some lower levels of management. And if you compare how our women in banking and finance are doing here in Australia, say, with women in the US, we're really lagging behind. We find that women in the last couple of years, or 2 or 3 years, in fact, have their position in senior management has deteriorated rather than improved, which is contrary to what we see in other countries. So there is something happening in Australia that cannot just be purely explained by family responsibilities. And there's a self-fulfilling cycle. if the decision makers, who are primarily men, believe that women eventually leave because of family responsibilities and are less committed to work, then gradually, over a period of the employment, they will offer them fewer training and development opportunities. They will offer them fewer promotions. So cumulatively, women will be worse off, say, after a 10-year period of employment, than their male counterparts. So what happens is, after an extended period of time, women look back and compare themselves to their colleagues, and they are dissatisfied. They feel they are not recognized. Women who go on maternity leave, for instance, are particularly vulnerable, despite the fact they may or may not be in senior positions, but I focus on women who are in management and in senior positions. And they are vulnerable because often part-time employment is not available to them, despite what the organizations may have on their books, as in terms of policies. And organizations in the banking and finance industry actually do really well in terms of being seen as family-friendly organizations. So the culture is that you cannot hold a part-time position in senior management. And of course, that is not necessarily true, because we see that happening in other countries, and it works perfectly well. It's just a question of mindset of the decision makers being more flexible. Now, of course, the argument is that in economic environment like we have at the moment, where managers are so focused on short-term, bottom-line figures, they are reluctant to be flexible. If nothing else, because it's easier to manage a homogeneous workforce than a non-homogeneous one. So there are no real effort or incentives from a management point of view, particularly male managers, to make these flexible, family-friendly work practices work. Most of the women had pointed to organizational change as a reason for their departure. So organizational change really occurs particularly when the financial economic environment is bad, like with restructures, cost cutting, mergers and acquisitions. And what the organization can do, particularly those organizations who truly believe and want to be seen as diverse and as friendly and equal employment opportunity employers, what they can do, they invariably have an officer that has got a title that is something like an equal employment officer. They have got very good human resource practitioners that they employ. And what I would suggest is that those people pay particular attention in times of organizational change that the gender demographics of the organization don't change dramatically as a result of those restructures, because what can happen is that as a result of restructures, a lot of unequal treatment and gender discrimination can go unnoticed because there's a lot of turmoil and things that are happening. People in decision-making positions really need to be careful when they make decisions that they are not being influenced by perceptions, long-standing perceptions of how certain people in the workforce may behave. There is no doubt that women are more likely than men, for instance, to leave the workforce because of family reasons or to want to work part-time because of family reasons. But it doesn't mean that all women do. And what we see is that in the samples that I have been looking at, a lot of the women are not even married, or have children. Women who are really career oriented have made a decision to either not have as big families or not have families so that they can dedicate to their passion, which is their career. So it's really important for decision makers to be aware. There's a phenomenon in the literature is called statistical discrimination. And that is discrimination based on the fact that maybe a number of members in a particular group may behave in a certain way, and we make an assumption that everybody in that group is going to behave in that way. It's very easy to do. It's not like people wake up in the morning and they think, oh, well, today I'm going to, you know, statistically discriminate against this group. So it's something that people need to be aware of and just ask, query their decisions. Why is it that I chose this candidate and not that one? So that they themselves check that their reasons are valid reasons. I'm currently undertaking a study that is being funded by an Australian Research Council grant. And we're looking at how Australian organisations are managing diversity. So we're going a little bit beyond gender to other things like age, racial, religion, all those differences that are visible. We're focusing on visible differences rather than probably less visible differences. Such as sexual orientation. Those are quite difficult to measure. And what we're doing is trying to find what are the bundles or the sets of practices that organisations have in place that have a positive impact on certain outcomes. Not just financial outcomes, but also non-financial outcomes like turnover and employee satisfaction. Also, shareholder perception of organisations. Because often what happens is organisations will put in place a practice with all good intentions to protect a certain group or to make sure that they are not discriminated, but that practice is going to cause other things not to work. So we are looking at sets, and we are also looking at for-profit, non-profit, small organisations versus large organisations, and organisations in all 17 industries, not just banking and finance, and comparing what works for what sections of our national workforce.